Welcome to the New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.co.nz.
Hello and welcome to the New Zealand Motoring Podcast. I am Damien O'Carroll.
And I'm David Linklater.
And today we have a special guest with us, Richard Bosselman.
Hello, guys.
Hello, Richard. Why don't you tell us why you're our special guest? What is it that makes you so special?
Well, I think it's basically because you abducted me and hauled me in here and said you were going to release those photographs if I didn't come along. No, you know me well. Nobody else does. I'm the automotive writer for Yahoo in New Zealand.
Excellent.
There you go.
Indeed, that is excellent.
And free plug for that one, yeah?
Yeah, that's fine.
Free plug for that one. Absolutely.
We've actually moved up a bit in the world because we're broadcasting from the Hilton Hotel in Auckland, aren't we?
Makes a bit of a change from a Range Rover or a...
Or my dingy office.
Or your dingy office.
Yeah, we're actually all here. The reason why we're all together is that we're at the local launch of the Volvo XC90, which is a car that we've talked about a bit in the past. We're not going to talk about that particular car this time, or are we?
Well, who knows? Maybe we'll talk about something else that
it might
carries.
pop up later. But should we just move on and do some news?
We should. Why not? I'll kick off. It's not really news, but it is interesting. I think
we'll be the judge of that.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be, especially Richard. It's very judgmental.
Not at all.
It's not going to be about a trip, is it?
It is. I'm going to brag about my last overseas trip. Actually, I think if regular listeners of the New Zealand Tech Podcast will know, the last Tech Podcast, which I believe we will be crossed over with a New Zealand Motoring Podcast.
It's just like when the Simpsons and Family Guy got together.
It's as momentous as that occasion. We did that one from San Francisco from the Ford, Further with Ford Future Technology event.
Nice alliteration. Yes.
I know, that was Ford's doing. I had nothing to do with it. I struggle with it every time it comes out of my mouth.
So what was Further with Ford?
Well, it was about all sorts of wonderful futuristic trends and clever people saying big words and... it's all very, very interesting. We covered a lot of it on the Tech Podcast, but just a few of the things I want to talk about here on the Motoring Podcast was some of the interesting things we got to play with in terms of cars over there. Of course, I will be talking about some of the cars we actually drove a wee bit later on, but at the moment, just for the newsy section, I want to touch on the remote control parking Ford Kuga.
Yes.
And the... previously scorned by myself, but really quite useful trailer steering device in the 4150.
That's the little knobby one. That's the one with the little knob in the vehicle.
The little knobby one, yeah. Right. Basically, the trailer assist, it's got some big silly name that I can't actually recall off the top of my head, was this very interesting little development that they've used with the backing camera and... electric power steering system. So basically there's a small knob on the dashboard and you turn it in the direction you want the trailer to go in.
Is it a special knob just for the trailer backing system?
It is a special knob just for the trailer backing system.
I can actually trump you on that, but carry on.
I'm sure you can.
I'll chime in later.
Is it a Porsche then?
No.
Okay.
I have used a
16 driving. Yeah,
that's right, David's better knob story.
I have used a better system. Okay. But anyway, carry on.
Anyway, but this is an interesting thing. It interested me in that it was basically using existing technology.
Yes.
And it made backing trailers much easier. Why would you want that, you may ask? Are you that incompetent that you can't back a trailer?
I am.
Well, I thought I was actually quite good at it until I tried to back a double cab Ford F-150 with a massive 20-foot trailer on the back.
Yeah, that's
and
a lot
I
of
could
metal.
Not do it. And the park assist system was actually very, very clever, very brilliant and very simple.
Yeah.
You basically just treat the little knob on the dash like a steering wheel.
Are you trying to break some sort of record for saying little knob the most times
in a podcast? Anyway. Yeah. But it was very cool. But the other very cool thing was the remote control parking system for the Ford Kuga they had there.
Which is a technology we're hearing a bit about at the moment, isn't it?
It is. It's coming out because I think, was it Range Rover?
Range Rover, yeah.
Something just previous.
And it's standard. Also going to be standard on the new BMW 7 Series. You're going to be able to park it remotely. Yes. Yeah.
Yes, but this is a very clever little system that you just actually used off the key fob.
Same with BMW.
Right.
Oh.
Okay. Well, it's not that clever. It's been done before.
No.
So, anyway.
Well, with the BMW, the chauffeur uses the key fob, of course. That's the difference.
Can I say, I forgot to chime in about the trailer backing assist.
Yes, that's right.
It's actually on the Audi Q7 in Europe as well.
In Europe.
And, yes, not compatible with New Zealand models, apparently, because of the tow hitch. But it just uses the MMI controller, so you don't even need to speak to it. It works exactly the same, though.
Well, I mean, the Audis always have a large knob in them as standard anyway.
Absolutely.
And I got to back a trailer with two Ducati motorbikes on it, which I think is cooler. Anyway, I'm sorry for interrupting. Do carry on.
A moment now. That was two interesting things that we got to play with. Yeah, and download the last New Zealand, well, whatever the episode was of the New Zealand Tech Podcast. But excellent podcast.
It is an excellent podcast.
We go into the whole Ford Tech event in much, much more detail. And it is actually more interesting than it sounds.
Excellent. Okay, well, look, my newsy item's kind of along the same theme, actually. We've been hearing a little bit about the new Mercedes E-Class, which is coming out next year, so it's still a little way away. E-Class is probably the oldest model in the Mercedes range now. They're sort of renewing everything. So, but the E-Class is also a model that traditionally is the first one to get a lot of new technology, funnily enough. It's very seldom the S-Class. It's very seldom the red flagships. The E-Class seems to be the favourite. And that's certainly the case with this one. So what they've done, I think we'd all agree that probably Mercedes-Benz has the greatest range of semi-autonomous driving technology of any brand on the market.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to say that, yeah.
You know, they've got that stuff already.
That actually works, probably.
Yeah. I mean, they have, you know, really great adaptive cruise and sort of steering assist and all that sort of stuff. So they're going to expand all that technology in the new E. It's going to have what they call next-level intelligent drive, which has got even more autonomous driving features. That's going to include the ability of the car to travel at up to 200 kilometres per hour on the open road with autonomous cruise control and steering assistance. So that's pretty incredible.
So, I'm sorry, officer, I was doubling the speed limit because my car wanted to.
Yes.
That seems fair.
But when you think about it, and we're obviously talking about European driving here, I think at very, very high speed like that, that's probably one area where autonomous driving is actually quite useful and safe.
That is where I believe most experts in the field have predicted it will happen first, will be very, very low speed, heavy traffic motorway, sort of, you know, 30, 40 kilometre an hour creeping along stuff, and very, very high speed.
Yes.
Autobahn type cruising, and that's...
So that's quite interesting. I imagine you'll still be required to have your hands on the wheel most of the time because that's a legislative thing. But
how can I sleep if that's the case?
But I mean, the car doesn't, the technology doesn't.
What if you put your feet on the wheel?
Yeah, that's true. That would probably be.
Probably have to take your shoes off.
Another extension of autonomous technology is something called evasive steering assist. So that's part of the pedestrian recognition technology. So lots of cars have pedestrian recognition now. If there's a pedestrian steps out in front of your car, it'll stop automatically. The E-Class will actually be able to steer around the pedestrian in an emergency situation and then get back on course, which I think is pretty amazing.
That's pretty incredible. One thing, we are tampering with natural selection here, of course.
Well, thin ice, that one. The one thing I'd have to ask is, wouldn't it be a lot easier in Europe if they just got rid of that pedestrian who's causing all these problems and then they wouldn't have to invent all this technology? Just a thought.
I would like to tell you both you're on dangerous ground.
Oh, no, I'm not going any further than that.
Not where Damien is going. You're just here for one episode.
Pebbles O'Carroll.
So, one more thing which is interesting, the E-Class is actually going to be the first production car to have car-to-car communication technology, which means that this car can talk to other cars when the weather's bad or there's difficult traffic conditions, and it can warn other cars of its presence.
What you mean is that this car will be able to talk to other new E-Classes on the road.
That's my point.
That's the catch.
That's right. The other car's got to be equipped with exactly the same technology, but it's a start.
You've got to start somewhere.
And this is one of the big things that we hear a lot about with autonomous driving technology. There's car-to-car and also car-to-X, which is car-to-infrastructure technology. Right. So having the technology in the cars is one thing, but they've also got to be able to talk to other cars and to infrastructure, like parking buildings and traffic lights and or emergency services, even stuff like that. And just my very last thing, which is only a minor thing but I think it's kind of cool, near field communication is a technology that's in a lot of smartphones at the moment, and the Mercedes has got this embedded into it, and that means that you'll be able to unlock it and start it with your phone.
Wow.
So that's pretty cool.
Except if anyone has actually used near field technology.
I tried the other day.
It's not always that easy.
Right. But, you know, it's a start.
It's getting there.
I think that's all really cool technology. And, yeah, look forward to seeing that car next year. Richard.
Well, my story, the news that caught my eye, was that Citroën will stop selling cars equipped with its once-renowned hydropneumatic suspension system, which you kids probably don't know about because you're somewhat younger than me. But it was their unique selling point for, like, decades. In fact, this was a key feature of the Citroën DS launched in 1955. And if you don't know about it, it's basically a linked suspension system in which conventional springs are replaced by nitrogen-filled spheres that are stiffened or softened using hydraulic fluid. It all sounds very complex. It was. The early ones were a nightmare, but they kind of made it work.
That's the grown-up explanation. I just think of it as squishy suspension.
And yeah, it had all sorts of development challenges, but they've used some variation of hydropneumatic ever since on the flagship models. Anyway, they've been weaning themselves off the hydropneumatic for some years, and the only hydropneumatic Citroën here now is the C5, which is
ancient.
Yeah, now it's 7 years old, so potentially might be replaced within a year or so. And that particular car uses a computer-controlled version that Citroën calls Hydroactive 3, which is run by computers, and sometimes it works perfectly and sometimes it works imperfectly, but nonetheless there's no doubt there are other...
It's a French car.
Yeah, well, yeah. It worked perfectly
last time I had a C5. It dumped the nose on the ground and I had to take it back to head office.
Well, it does raise the point, of course. There's no doubt these days that there are other ways to establish a plush ride quality, and Citroën itself is saying it's working on what they say are new technologies to do this, because it says comfortable ride remains at the forefront and at the heart of its top models.
You know, when I heard about this, I was really upset, and I thought, oh, that's terrible, that's the essence of Citroën, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Sure.
Blah. But isn't it sad that the essence of Citroën is just one piece of technology?
Well, I guess, but you know, moving forward, obviously they would go to adaptive dampers and air suspension, which is another way of doing it, and it is a more cost effective way of doing it. But all the same, and I just want to say this before you butt in again, David, I was interested to read in an adult online specialist site for grown ups, which you won't have heard of.
You've been visiting an adult website
or Automotive News Europe. A quote from Citroën boss Linda Jackson. That is Linda Jackson. She's a Brit, even though she's in charge of a French car company. And she said hydropneumatic will cease because it is, I quote, old technology. And that made me laugh. I mean, there are innumerable examples of old technology that still have relevance in cars.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the steering wheel. It's been around for more than 100 years, and it hasn't been bettered. In fact, there's the wheel.
Have you not seen Knight Rider?
Well, indeed. Yeah, true. Well, tillers didn't last all that long. But, I mean, I would say, and there's the wheel on the car itself. I mean, show me all the hover cars on the market. And just because it's old doesn't make it bad. And even though hydropneumatic did have a reputation for being a bit different, in basic principle action, it's really quite good. But the point I was going to make about it is that there's a theory that the real reason Citroën wants to get rid of it is to do with money and business and the brand's future, because there's some conjecture that all the cost cutting that's going on at PSA at the moment is all to do with preparation for the day when the future majority owner, which is Dongfeng, a Chinese maker, shuts down the French plants and moves manufacturing in Citroëns and Peugeots to China. And China, of course, is now the biggest market, full stop, for these brands. And you know, you've got to remember, a lot of French people these days drive Toyotas, Fords and BMWs these days, so it's a bit of an X-Files thing going on.
Yeah, it is. And like the Citroën's DS brand, which they don't like to think of as a Citroën brand, is huge in China, and
it's massive.
Buyers there don't care about hydropneumatic suspension.
No.
However,
can I just say, though, I think it is particularly rich of a manufacturer of Citroën's particular standing to be criticising something for being old technology.
Yeah. I mean, the really sad thing is it's one thing. It's an unusual thing that made the brand really different. Mm. And I think anybody who's driven one of those cars, it has a really unique feel to it. Even if you drive a C5 now, it has a really unique feel to it that no other car has, and I think it's really sad that...
Well, it is in a way. I recall when I was quite a younger person than I am now, going for a ride in a DS Citroën, and and thinking it was a great preparation right in the back of that for any inter-island ferry crossing, because it, it just had this incredible sort of motion to it.
It's a it is a fascinating technology, though, and it is a sign of the times. I mean, Peugeot, sure. Citroën, they need to share platforms and technologies, and that's one thing that precludes them from sharing too much.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Anyway, that was my picture.
Should we move on to some road tests?
Why not? Now, I think I might have mentioned at some stage that I recently went over to Americaland.
Americaland. Is that where you left your wallet? Oh, no.
On the plane, on the way back, yeah. Yes. Mm. But anyway, I left the contents of my wallet in Americaland.
Sure.
But while we were over there, we did have the opportunity to drive briefly a few cars. And one of the ones that I just made a beeline for, mainly because there wasn't actually much else left, but it was there, and I wanted to drive it anyway, was the Ford Edge.
What's a Ford Edge?
Basically, it's going to be the car that replaces the Territory.
Do you know that for sure?
No, I don't, but I'm making a bold claim.
It's speculation.
It is speculation. Yeah. But
it's probably relatively sound speculation.
I think it is. That was why I wanted to drive it, just get a scoop on everyone.
So sure. Where does an Edge come from? It's an American model.
It's been around there for a while. I believe it was launched in 2006. It started production. So
I've sat in an Edge. In fact, Richard and I have sat in an Edge. We had a demonstration of Ford Sync in an Edge.
Sync 2.
Yeah, Sync 2.
Yeah.
We didn't go anywhere.
No.
We just looked up a restaurant.
I went for a drive.
And we found the radio stations in Detroit.
We found Elvis Radio.
Elvis Radio.
But we digress. Please do carry on.
No, I'm interested in this whole Elvis Radio thing. Anyway, the one I drove was a Sport, which features the new 2.7 EcoBoost V6 twin turbo, which is good for 230 kilowatts and 475
newton meters. Oh, that's
decent. And it's quite a quick car.
It's quite a good looking car. I suppose we don't need to talk about how it looks too much, because we'll pop a picture on the website, won't we?
Yeah, absolutely. But no, it's a very handsome car. And the thing that actually really blew me away was the build quality inside. It's got a really, really nice interior. But it is surprisingly powerful, even though, you know, we were in town and obeying speed limits and being sensible.
Of course you were.
Absolutely.
But very, very comfortable, very, very well equipped, and just a really, really nice car. It'll be interesting to see, if it comes here, which I'm sure it will, how much they'll sort of get it in for. But there are, of course, front-wheel drive models and four-wheel drive models.
So would it be cheaper than a Territory?
No,
I know the Territory won't be with us for much longer.
Don't know. It's hard to say. I mean, at a glance, you would probably say, well, no, because it's much better than the Territory. But, I mean, hard to say.
It'd be slightly smaller than the Territory,
but then of course you've got the Everest coming in above that, which is slightly bigger, so that's sort of filling the range that way, I would imagine.
So if we got an Edge, where would that come from? Where would it be built?
That'd have to come from America. I don't think they build it anywhere else.
Another one of the burgeoning ranks of American built cars coming to New Zealand. Yeah.
And with the New Zealand dollar against the US at the moment. Wow, what a fascinating opportunity that
sounds
will
like
be.
One for the New Zealand Business Podcast.
Sure, sorry.
Anyway, it does actually also come with a 2-litre EcoBoost 4-cylinder engine, or the old 3.5 Duratec V6, which I think...
That sounds thirsty.
Yeah. You'd give that a miss if you were Ford New Zealand. But anyway, it was a really great car. I was massively impressed by it, and I really enjoyed my brief time in it.
Where did you drive it? Just around Silicon Valley?
Around in San Francisco, on a few steep streets. We're tempted to sort of
do some jumps like Steve McQueen.
Yeah, it was the temptation for the odd bullet moment, but so it was just an urban drive, but it there were a few occasions where perhaps temptation may have got the better of us and we opened it up a wee bit, but
cool.
I'll tell you what I've opened up. I've opened up the Volvo S60 Polestar.
Yes, I knew what you'd do that.
So while you were away,
basically
going to burger joints, but in between times going to tech conferences, I went out to Hampton Downs and sort of the surrounding areas to drive the new Volvo S60 and V60 Polestar models, which is sort of the performance flagship of the Volvo passenger car range. It's from... a company which is Volvo's official motorsport partner. So Polestar does all the race cars. It's actually still a separate company. I suppose you could think of it as the Volvo equivalent to AMG or BMW M, but unlike those companies, it is separate. They do their own thing. So they develop these sort of really special versions of Volvo passenger car models. This is actually the first time that we've had a full Polestar model in New Zealand. We've had the odd one, which has been what they call Polestar optimised, which basically means they plug it into a computer and give you a bit more power.
They've stuck some stickers on it.
Yeah, but this is the real deal. This is something like 240 different part numbers, 50 new components, a lot more power, adjustable suspension. You can crank the suspension up and down depending on how you want to set the car up, if you happen to be on track days or whatever. So the S60 is a sedan, V60 wagon, obviously. Now, there's only 10 of these things.
Tell me, Polestar, motorsport arm.
Yes.
Motorsport, Volvo, New Zealand, Australia, V8, right?
Funnily enough, we did have the Volvo V8 supercar driver Scott McLaughlin with us on the day that we went to drive the cars. And yes, he does drive a V8 Volvo, and no, there is no such thing on sale. But I'm glad you mentioned this, because each of the 10 cars on sale in New Zealand actually has a little package of special equipment with Scott McLaughlin's signature on it. So, and he did actually, as a Volvo works driver, he did actually take part in the late stages of the development of the car in Sweden. So he's had a little bit of input into the car. He claims that the carbon fibre strut brace under the bonnet actually was his idea.
All right.
And they tried a number of materials. So that was his little claim to fame in the car.
Because most of that development was done by Robert Dahlgren, wasn't it? His teammate from...
Yes.
Yeah. Who turned out to be... not as good on the track as
Scott,
but he's probably a better test driver.
So no, he was quite upfront about it. He said no, he didn't have a huge role to play in it, but he's done his bit.
Honestly, I'm surprised that he actually had anything to do with it, to be honest.
No, he did say you know, it was in the very late stages, so he didn't have a huge amount to do with it. But there you go, you know, it's genuine. So his signature's on all these New Zealand cars, they're all numbered. It's based on the T6, which it's a bit old school actually, because we hear a lot about Volvo going to four-cylinder engines, and actually a lot of Volvo no longer being interested in motorsport, but just forget about all of that for a moment.
Just for now.
These models are based on the T6, which in this generation of car is a 3-litre turbo straight-six engine.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the last probably six-cylinder Volvos that we'll see. 258 kilowatts, 500 newton metres. Get to 100 k's an hour in 4.9 seconds.
Wow.
That's quite quick.
It is quick. So we drove it at Hampton Downs. Very good car on the track. Scott McLaughlin actually had the cars adjusted slightly for the track work. He just made the front a bit softer and the rear a bit harder just to get better turning. So that's the sort of thing you can do with these cars. You have to crawl under them. There isn't a magic button on the dashboard. You have to actually get under the car.
Well, but that's race car pure, isn't it? Where you can do your own manual adjustment. Yeah, that's great.
And it's easy to do, apparently. You just click a dial under the car.
Fantastic.
I would dispute that anything that involves crawling under something I don't call easy.
I did watch the Volvo technician do it, and it wasn't super easy. In fact, the rear shocks, easier in the wagon because you get in through the through the tailgate, but in the sedan, you have to reach in just sort of through the front of the rear wheel arch. So, yeah, interesting. I think it's probably the only car on sale actually with you know, pure adjustable shocks like that. So it's probably not as hardcore as something like a BMW M3 or a full AMG vehicle. It's kind of in between, and they're very much focused on it being like an everyday performance car.
Mm-hmm.
But by the same token, very, very quick and a lot of fun. Sounds good. Straight six engine.
Mm.
Fantastic. $95,990 for the sedan and $97,990 for the wagon. So probably quite good value in terms of performance and... certainly exclusivity, because there's only 10 of the things. Mm. There's only actually 750 of these cars made globally. So you are getting a slice of something pretty special, I think. And depending on what Polestar do in the future, because, of course, Volvo's moving exclusively to four-cylinder engines, so anything that Polestar does in the future will have to be four. I don't know whether that includes the next generation of these cars. They might do another year's worth, I suppose. They are developing a really high-powered four-cylinder.
Yeah, that e-drive engine.
It probably depends how many six-cylinder engines they've got.
Yeah. But if you've got a regular Volvo, and this is any regular Volvo back to 2005, so we're talking nearly a decade's worth of cars, you can buy a Polestar optimization kit for it.
Wow.
Which basically, again, just involves your dealer plugging it in to a computer, but it's quite a good package because you get a bit more power. It adjusts the gearbox calibration, it gives you better throttle response, and in the cars where it's compatible, you get better steering as well.
Wow.
So that's quite cool. It'd be a couple of grand. Like on a V40 T5, which is a little hatchback, it's $2,070, I think. But it's a really good package. And we actually drove one of those on the day as well, and it was good too.
Do if you retrofit a car, do you have to repaint it Smurf blue like this?
That's called Rebel blue.
Oh, Rebel.
Some of the cars I've got here, the
Swedish Rebels,
Rebel blue. Yeah, that's a cool colour. But cool. Yeah, I don't know whether
it's quite shouty though.
Yeah, the other cars are black.
Oh, okay.
So yeah,
easy to find in the same.
Disappointment. Yeah. What have you been driving, Richard?
Well, speaking of, that was nice. While you were at Hampton Downs,
it was a Segway.
Yeah, it was a Segway.
Sorry, let's go again. Richard, what powerful four-wheel drive performance sedan with a turbocharger and six-cylinder engine have you been driving?
Actually, two turbochargers on my little baby, David, and I was there while you were at Hampton Downs. I was down the other end of the country at the Southern Hemisphere Proving Ground driving on snow and ice in the Holden Insignia, which of course has a 2.8-litre V6, twin turbo, 239 kilowatts and 435 newton metres, and it runs fully all-wheel drive and a 6-speed auto. And I don't call it a new car because it's not. It's new to Holden, but it's actually not new to Opel.
Well, it's a new name. What's
that's
an Insignia?
Right, well, an Insignia is a medium-sized car that comes from old Opel, though ours are really Vauxhalls since that's the right-hand drive route. And this car has been around for 7 years already, though you might not realise this because it has quite a smart-looking shape. It's had a recent interior refit, and it's got quite a fulsome specification, which does seem very modern. It's got everything in it, like a touchscreen and a lot of good tech. So it would be hard to believe, if you didn't know any of the history of this car, that it began production in 2009. This is the car that is a stepping stone to something in our future. At the moment, this is Holden introducing the Insignia nameplate to New Zealand and getting us used to something other than a Commodore. Now, the appeal of this car is that it comes with a lot of technology. It's got adaptive cruise control, it's got lane change alert, auto emergency braking, all stuff you can't get on a Commodore. There's rear cross traffic alert. And it comes. It's the sports model, so it's got heated Recaros, beautiful Recaros in it. Sat nav, adaptive forward lighting, all that sort of good stuff that you get from Europe these days. It has a really interesting engine. This engine has been around. I guess you all know the engine comes from Holden. It's made in Port Elizabeth and it's shipped to Russelsheim and put into the cars. This engine actually precedes its Opel use. It was actually first developed for.
I know, pick me.
Go on.
It's a Swedish connection.
It is. Saab. We're back there, Saab 9.5. Yeah, that's right. And it's a really interesting engine. It's got a lot of grunt, but it's it has some quite interesting traits, none of which became evident when we were driving at the Southern Hemisphere Proving Ground because we were on ice and snow and really, you know, there's zero traction and some traction, and really just in first and second gears, which are torque limited. And it was great fun driving there for the day because I got very proficient at Scandi flicks and all that sort of thing, and continuous four-wheel drifts around a central point, which looked pretty spectacular on a video coming out soon.
That all sounds really useful for everyday driving.
It was particularly useful next day when we drove down to Glen Orchie and back. It really came, you know, it was great, especially when we were going past that tourist traffic. Look, there are things about this car which are quite interesting. It has all those performance modes on it, and there's a VXR mode on it, which is the ultimate sports mode, and that makes it into quite a racy car, though the initial power, the initial acceleration is, because first and second gears are torque limited, it's got quite a funny way of producing its power. It really The sweet spot takes a lot of finding, and you've really got to be with a colleague of ours who I will not name, but is known for driving fast, and he reached a speed well beyond what I would want to drive at on that road, and that's where the sweet spot was.
Why do they talk limit it when it's a four-wheel drive car?
Yeah. Good question. I can't answer that.
Can't, because it's just so powerful.
Well, it is. I guess because of the I don't know. Yeah. Actually, it's a good question. What I was going to say is there's one surprising thing about this car and the way it drives, and that is it's on 20-inch alloys, has lowered suspension and very stiff springs, so you'd think it would be an absolute unremitting thing to be sitting in, but it's actually got really nice ride quality. It really surprises me. Now, there are things about this car which might be a little bit challenging, and they're all numerical issues. One is the fuel burn. Holden cites 11.3, which isn't brilliant for a modern Holden these days, but realistically it's a lot worse. 12.5 was the best I saw out of it. And this, of course, is at a time when a six-cylinder Commodore has managed to be a sub-10-litre car. And if you want to bring that into relevance, consider that the HSV GTS, which is a monster car, HSV quotes 13.2 litres per 100 k's for that car, and that's a 430 kilowatt 740 newton metre supercharged 6.3 litre V8. Now, another thing, weight. An HSV GTS, of course, as we all know, weighs 1,882 kilos. Anybody want to guess how much an Insignia weighs?
1,881 kilos.
No, a little bit less than that. Oh. It's been on a, it's gone through the initial diet. 1,836 kilos.
Yeah, so not far off.
Heavy car.
Yeah.
Also heavy is the price, $69,990.
So that's getting up towards Commodore SS.
That is above, that is $1,000 more than an SSV.
Yeah.
And it's and an SSV Redline these days is $74,990. That's also $10,000 more than they charge for the car in Australia. And I know what you're going to say, and I accept that there are enough points of difference in market structure that it's not fair to simply suggest we should pay the same as Australia simply on the basis of exchange rate. And yet, you know, it's too much. It's too much for that car. That car should be like a, you know, it's conceivably asking people to consider the Insignia against BMW, Volvo, Audi, and really from driving it, it's a neat car in its own way, but it's more of a four of a, something like a Legacy 3.6 RS, which is 50k.
It's got a bit more performance than that.
Though, yeah, it does, and yes, it does. So it's niche.
But they're not expecting to sell a whole bunch.
Oh, no, they're not. No, I mean, no.
It's there to do a job, which is to sort of introduce
us. Yep, it is. And it's probably only going to be there for perhaps just 2 years, I'd say, given you know, cars don't stay in production for 9 years much in Europe anymore.
It's interesting the way they've gone about it, though, haven't it, Holden? Because they've introduced this car. They've done the same with Astra.
Yeah.
As sort of part of the same plan. But Astra is, again, a neat car, I reckon, but it's been around a long time, too. And
whoa,
they've just unveiled a new Astra in Europe.
Frankfurt Motor Show in September.
Just as Holden are introducing the previous model in New Zealand.
That's so, right. Yeah. But that new Astra will be here next year.
Yeah.
I'd guarantee it. And this is the same sort of thing with Insignia. I think it's just giving us a taste of something better to come. And I suspect it's here simply because Opel already started to show concepts pointing to a replacement for this car. And I suspect that car, when it comes out, will be our new Commodore.
Yeah.
Yeah, not some Buick from China, which is the other outlandish theory you hear from time to time.
Oh, I look forward to you eating your words.
Oh, do you?
Yes, I think you're right.
With soy sauce.
Yeah.
Duck.
What else have we been driving?
Well, as I again may have mentioned earlier, in the land of the free, one of the other cars that I got to drive over there, of course, was the car that you've driven, Richard.
Yeah,
and you've criticised us for not featuring in our V8 podcast.
Well, it was a sad omission.
Well, none of us are driven it at that stage. Only you.
Yeah, I could have been on that podcast.
The new Mustang. You're on this one.
So absolutely. I am.
So we managed to get our hands on an automatic 5-litre V8 GT. What did we decide the power output was in the end? There's been some...
Oh, well, yes, that's right, because the power output they gave originally for the car in the US when I was there last September to drive it on the world launch
yes.
was was higher than it is now, yes, because the mathematical formula for
just the differences between the formula
SAE and
yeah. So we're not missing out on any kilowatts here.
It's no,
just we've just got different kinds of kilowatts than they have.
But it's still 306 kilowatts.
That's quite a few,
which is quite enough. 530 newton meters. So it gets along all right. I didn't really get to open it up around town. I'm sure you would have had more experience than that. But I was rather impressed by it.
In case anybody's been living in a cave for the last year, maybe we should explain that what's special about this Mustang is that it's coming to New Zealand. It's
absolutely.
Right-hand drive.
Yes, the first time. First time for Mustang so in right-hand
that's
drive.
That's the big deal about this Mustang.
Sure is.
Indeed. A lot of people are very excited.
And it has some very modern technology in it. Do you know Ford, which is a brand which is always well ahead of the game? I mean, Ford is really America's Mercedes. They've come up with this amazing thing.
That's a quote.
Yeah,
Ford,
that is.
America's Mercedes.
No, well, hear me out. They've come up with this amazing thing called, I don't know if you've heard of this before, independent rear suspension. No, honestly, I mean, it's never been on a Mustang before. It was almost on the last one. This is a great story. It was almost on the last one. They took it off the last one to save $100 per car. So they left it on leaf springs.
Yeah,
so it's finally gone onto IRS. And I don't know, you guys have driven leaf spring? We've driven leaf spring Mustang before. It's a wild ride.
Yes.
You know, it can be a
leaf spring Falcon Ute.
Yeah, absolutely. Much the same sort of thing. It can be a
with a big
very
V8 engine, and that was terrifying.
It can be a very engaging drive.
Yes, that's the word for it.
Yeah.
Yes. I remember a FPV, Turbo 6 Ute.
Sure.
That I could get around corners without turning the steering wheel.
No, just on the throttle.
Yeah, didn't need it.
Yeah.
But yes.
Amid all this talk of big engines, I suppose the other thing, I haven't driven it, of course.
No?
You guys, but
really?
The other interesting thing about Mustang is it will also come with a 2.3-litre four-cylinder engine.
It does.
Yeah.
Which I think I seem to be alone in being the only person actually looking forward to that.
Really?
Yes, you are.
We were heading towards one in San Francisco, and it was a convertible, bright orange convertible Mustang. I thought, we'll grab that. Heading towards it, and the bloke from Ford said, "Oh, that's an EcoBoost.
Yeah.
Are you sure?"
There's so much wrong with everything you said in that sentence.
So we ended actually going and jumping a 5-liter GT, because you've only got a chance to drive one Mustang, really. It's got
that's
to
true,
react, doesn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
So,
but I would say the same of having a chance to own a Mustang, I think. That
sure. But I would just tell you, and I know a lot of people will gravitate towards that automatic gearbox, and it's a very nice gearbox, but I would just say, please go and drive the manual. Because the manual is fantastic. It's got a really nice shift. Unlike previous Mustangs, it's got a really nice clutch feel. It doesn't feel like it's going to ping your left knee up through your nostril every time you change gear. It's and the car and the engine is just so good with the manual gearbox.
Yeah.
It's just really flexible. And it pulls huge wheelies. Incredible smokies.
I believe it actually even has the
it does. It has something called it has line lock,
yeah.
and Ford New Zealand, and you know, it's so sad that they're actually taking line lock off the car. Though it's a burnout button, so basically what line lock does is it locks the front brakes and not the rears, so you just floor the throttle in it. It's for people who go drag racing in America, which is a popular pastime.
Yes.
Because let's face it, you know, shooting's out. Shooting's not popular anymore.
You'll find that depends on where.
Oh, true. Yeah. But drag, all street drag racing is a popular
hobby.
You
guys are really pushing the boundaries, this podcast, I'd like to say.
Oh,
and
sorry.
I'd just like to disassociate myself from many of the comments made on this podcast tonight.
Don't worry. It could have been worse. I was going to say, it depends on where you are. If it's in a church, it's okay.
No. that is...
I've seen all our American listeners are gone now.
Coming to get you, boy.
Sorry.
Anyway, yeah, I've driven the EcoBoost. I've driven the V8. EcoBoost is a nice engine, but frankly, man, if you're going to buy a Mustang, you're going to buy a V8.
I know. I reluctantly accept that.
It doesn't sound right, and it just doesn't. You know, I mean, you know how it is.
Have we seen how much this Mustang is?
Oh, we know how much this car is.
They're quite surprising numbers, I think.
Well, do you want to release those?
$56,990 for the four-cylinder one that no one will want, according to you guys.
No, not saying that. But.
And $76,990 for the V8 one, which is about the same price as a Commodore SS Redline.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
that's your convertible, of course, isn't it?
Yes.
Your GT's at the 70s, right? Just around 70k.
Yeah.
But so your GT Fastback manual, which is, of course...
Yeah, the one I drove.
Is the manual cheaper than the auto? Or is
it? Same price. The manual come, and they both, the GTs are coming with performance pack as standard.
Yeah,
and performance pack is really cool.
What do you get with performance pack?
Mine locker, obviously.
No, you don't get. Performance pack gives it. I think it's a change on the suspension and. I'm just trying to find out what they do to it. I'm just quickly reading through my story about. I wrote about it last September. It was a while ago now.
That's going
to
take you a while.
I'm sorry, because it was quite a long story. Yeah, the one we drove was on 20-inch rims and Pirelli P0s, which is really cool. A Mustang on P0s is cool. Yeah.
Ours was on
4 wheels.
It was fairly comfortable, actually.
Yeah.
It's very San Francisco aren't exactly the smoothest.
Yeah, you see the streets of San Francisco.
I know.
Want to do the theme.
I thought it was, what I liked about the carbon is it's got a nice ride, it's got much more assertive handling than the old one, and it's also got a really good steering feel. Did you agree with that?
Yeah, to a degree.
Sure.
Not all in that too, because it was illegal.
Okay. And it's got a Ripley low speed ride, and it's got a lot of road noise. But the engine sounds great.
An American stereo, which means
it does have American stereo.
And this is sort of another segue into our feature, which is coming up. I don't know if it's as good looking as Mustangs from years gone by.
Well, it's trying to look like a Mustang from years gone by. That's the problem.
A bit too hard.
And it's also Mustangs of recent memory.
Yeah, thing you'd have to agree is with IRS it settles down that rear end, so the rear end looks right now. It always looked jacked up before.
Yeah, that's true.
And now it looks kind of right.
Yeah. All right. So that was a segue into our feature, which is our idea of the best looking and worst looking cars on sale. So what we all agreed to do was have a think about what we thought were the best looking cars that you can buy new in New Zealand at the moment, and also the worst looking cars. And we've each made a list of three, and since Richard is our guest, he should probably go first.
I think so.
Oh, cheers, thank you. So first of the guillotine. Right, so where do we start?
Let's start with the three best looking.
Three best? Oh, right, okay. I gave this a lot of thought in the...
This was secret, by the way.
Yeah, this was secret, so you don't know.
We didn't confer on this.
Yeah, and I'd like to thank you again for the advance warning of 14 hours.
I'm
a lot of time to research.
To see if we've got any double-ups.
Okay.
Can I please say the 14 hours is far more preparation time than we usually
do. It's extensive preparation.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to go 3-2-1, all right? This is my third.
I've ranked them. All right.
Okay.
All right.
So, my number three car is...
Is this three as in the best of the best, or is this...
This is the three best.
Yeah,
and this is my this is the bronze medal.
Okay,
but sure. As the Jaguar F-Type Coupe. Now I say that because Jaguar does stunning designs in general, but I like the F-Type Coupe because it's not a throwback. I'm doing my thing. I'm going to walk out. No, I won't.
That's right, we're almost done.
I loved it. No, okay. It's not a throwback to an earlier age. It doesn't have any particular cues to an earlier age.
It doesn't.
But it looks really magnificent when it's parked against an E-Type.
It's derivative.
Which is one of the best looking cars of all time. Let's agree on that. Yes. Right, we agree on that.
Which side you're looking at, they were different.
Yeah, they were different on each side. Yeah. Left was, yeah.
Yeah, the E-Type's
I would call it a thoroughly contemporary interpretation of the long nose, short body, two-seater car.
You might call it that, but people would have nodded off by the time you got to the end of the
sentence. Thank you very much. Okay, number two, thanks for making me feel so welcome. Number two is I don't know what you think about this, Mazda CX-3.
Yeah.
Ah, right. Different. Okay. Small SUVs, I think you agree, are really hot at the moment, and it's all down to style, basically. If you want to have something. Yep. Okay. So obviously, you need to have a car that's practical as well. Okay, because it's an SUV. Now, I think this car really cracks that. It's a family vehicle, okay? It's for a smaller family. It's really for smaller family members in the bag.
You mean smaller in numbers or smaller in stature?
Dimensionally, but of course,
what family?
You know, yeah.
I think it
kind of works in that way, and it's all about, these cars are all about look at me, and the CX-3 is just really a great looking car in dimension and stance. I think it's better than the CX-5.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's really, really hard to make an SUV look really good.
Yep.
Just because of the nature of what they are. They're a tall two box.
And thing. I think what really cracks it for that car is that it has a design credibility that when it stands out in a much more affluent crowd.
Yep. Agreed.
Because it's just so tightly drawn.
It's quite an aspirational car.
It is. Yeah. Okay, so my top choice. Is what I would call a brilliant piece of art and a beautiful combination of form and function. It sounds good, doesn't it? I'd worked on that one for a while.
That's why I earn the big dollars. It's either going to be a pretentious supercar or something that's disappointing.
You know, well, you've got. Please remember that I write now that my autos page is now on the technology section of Yahoo. If you're looking for that, is beyond the Kardashian belt. If you're thinking of a solar system, but it's a great planet to go and visit, and I'd encourage you all to do so. Look at me through social media, because social media is where it's all at now, guys. BMW i8 coupe. Okay.
No.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like
it's as radical looking as a Ferrari LaFerrari, which I would have picked. Except it's not a showroom offer in New Zealand. So there are some here, but it's not a showroom offer in New Zealand. You're a hard crit.
So what's your argument for the i8 being good looking?
Like? Because it looks striking, because it has to be slippery, right? Because with the hybrid tech demands utter efficiency in all respects. It has to extract every last kilometre per litre because of how it runs, a 1.5 litre engine and a couple of electric motors. Okay? But then
waiting for the bit where you get
you say the same kind of thing about remember that Honda Insight? I mean, they tried to do the same with that. That was the whole rationale behind that car, first little Honda. But that looked like a suppository. Okay? whereas the i8 is just absolutely gorgeous. And it's utterly entrancing. Well, it's entrancing if not gorgeous.
It's a fantastic car, but it's not gorgeous.
And I think I told you that when I drove it, all too briefly, some months ago, we had a group of guys in a car who were so captivated by that car that they forgot. It was quite funny, actually, because we were sitting in a car park just talking about the car, myself and Ed Finn from BMW New Zealand. He's been a previous guest
on the
show.
Yes.
And we watched these people sort of, they saw the car, stopped. Their mistake was all three of them were looking at the car, including the driver. Their second mistake was the driver forgot he put the car into reverse, and he just reversed back into a pole at speed. Anyway, they're my picks of the three best.
Very good. What about
Do you want to do the worst now?
Yeah, let's do the worst.
Okay, now you're gonna tell me I'm being unfair and I'm picking on the little guy kicking a kid. You know.
I know that.
Yeah, that's why we asked you.
Exactly. So, again, in order of 3, 2, 1, the Mahindra pickup, P-I-K-up.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
No, you're wrong.
Yeah, it's like a toy from a Christmas cracker.
That's why
it was the cheapest Christmas cracker you could buy from the warehouse about 3 weeks after Christmas. It's as though the clay was left in the sun, and instead of baking it, melted, and somebody just took it and said, "Oh, well, that's good enough. Let's just build that anyway."
Which Mahindra are we talking about?
That's the pickup, the PIK up.
See, that car would be in the Soviet. It's good category for me. I actually like those things. It's just so ugly.
That's where we differ, mate. You live in the city. I live in the country. I'm out in the real world. Okay, and I'm thinking of vehicle.
Because we are a rural population.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm
How's
thinking
the view there.
It's really good.
The
I milked the cows before we came up tonight. By the way, And I'm thinking of cars that I really wouldn't even want to get into if somebody was even chasing me with a pitchfork, or, you know, I was caught out in the rain. And but I thought, well,
I have driven a Mahindra pickup once, and if you were being chased, you'd only get as far as the first quarter before it would wobble over.
Anyway, we're not talking about that side of the aspect. We're just talking about how they look.
To do with that.
Okay, it's just about how they look.
All right.
My number two is the people's choice, or the one that would be the people's choice that people wouldn't choose to go into, and that is the Honda Odyssey. And I would have to say that, yes, I understand that Honda has certain styling cues that Odyssey remains true to, but really it just hasn't worked. I mean, the shape lacks cohesion. It's just all wrong to me. And I suppose part of it is that I hate sharp edges, and basically the Odyssey now to me looks like they basically Honda, I could imagine, is one of those workplaces where every Friday afternoon they say, right, free time, let's go out, and it's a group sort of thing where we all sort of, you know, celebrate the company, and here's the game. You've got some straws and some glue, and you've got to make a kite or something like that. In this case, they just said, here's some paper, and we're doing origami today.
I'm actually really hoping this story is going somewhere.
And that's what they did. They made an origami car, and then they just put a big
cheese grater in front of it.
Yeah, they did. They just put a big gleaming cheese grater on the front of it.
I think you're being pretty unfair to what's essentially a functional vehicle, but okay. Sorry, a functional vehicle with a big chrome grill on it.
Yeah.
You're a hard crowd. Okay, number one, and I know you're just setting me up. I know you are. Okay, number one, Ford EcoSport. And, okay, that just walked into it.
Okay.
Because it was designed for Brazil and intended to, you know, okay, it's a practical car, but then it was foisted onto us as a one Ford car, and it's not a one Ford car. It's the only one Ford car they have that isn't.
Yeah.
And it's just horribly uncoordinated in its shape, and it's like a 3-in-1 car is in 3 disparate designs, basically.
I feel a bit sorry for it because it's had such a kicking on this podcast.
I know you guys have got into it before. Yeah, and I just think that, you know, and the really unfortunate thing about the EcoSport is that Ford itself has identified that it's bad, and they've already affected a facelift overseas, which has been sold in the UK. And I tried to check again with Ford New Zealand today, and I got no answer on it as to when it's coming to New Zealand, and they just will not give an answer on that. And I think if they bought the updated one in here, it would resolve all those issues.
Do you think?
Yeah, because for one thing, it takes a spare. Oh, yeah, it would. Because one thing it does is that they've changed the stance of the car, which makes a big difference, and they've taken the spare wheel off the back door.
It's still quite awkward looking, though, isn't it?
But it would still be fairly awkward to drive, too.
So. But we're not talking about driving, are we? Because that's a whole new thing.
Try and stay on cars, please, Damien. We're talking about styling.
And the only reason why I wonder if there's, you know, if the updated one isn't here is that Ford New Zealand just bought a whole job lot of the original ones, and
well, that's possible,
can't shift them.
Yeah,
so anyway, were my choices.
Thank you
for having me on the show. I'll leave now.
It's actually a condition that you have to stay and listen to the rest of the
show
now. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Shall I go next?
We'll undo the chain on your ankle once we're finished.
Thank you. Yes.
I'm going to go next.
You go next.
I didn't bring a list of 3. I bought a much longer list with the expectation that there might be some double ups to go in a different direction. And I'm glad I did that, because
I'm going to look at your list and see how my cars are on there.
A paper, and I'm hiding it from you.
I bet they were.
These are in no particular order.
He's criticised all yours. He's good. He's wrong with that one.
My first one.
We're all ears.
Don't speak too soon. My first one is the Jaguar XJ. Now,
that's a best. I wasn't sure whether it started best or worst.
No, we started at best.
Right,
best.
Good.
Yeah. Jaguar XJ. Now, it's not as beautiful in the conventional way as other Jaguars.
Yep.
Like, you probably look at an XR for an F-Type or whatever, and think, yeah, they're beautiful cars. The XJ, to some eyes, is a bit odd-looking. I think it's a really good-looking car because it's distinctive. You look at an XJ, you can't mistake it for anything else. You know, you look at other Jaguars, an XE to an XF, kind of hard to pick them sometimes. They're nice-looking cars, but there's a bit of a Russian doll thing going on there. XJ has got all the flowing lines that you'd expect of a Jaguar, but it's got those really idiosyncratic touches as well, which I think makes it a really special luxury car. Okay, where you go, tear me to pieces.
No, just saying, I was just harking back to how you were telling me how an F-type is derivative and has that
line.
Well,
an XJ is not derivative of anything.
Well, except every other XJ that's been before it.
Well, it's not, though. I mean, if you look at some of the styling detail on an XJ, the only thing about the XJ that's probably derivative is the shape of the front grille.
Right, okay.
Which recalls.
I would agree with you, though, that virtually, I would say simply that I agree with your choice of a Jaguar, because I personally believe that there'd be very few Jaguars that wouldn't make this list. Because I think most Jaguars are beautiful cars.
They are, yeah, they do make beautiful cars. Yeah. Okay, number two may surprise you. I'm going to say Holden Commodore.
You know, I'm not surprised you said that, because that was on my top seven.
Yeah. When you really think about it, you know, it's a very familiar car, and you tend to ignore them because they're taxis and they're police cars, and they're driven by wrecks.
It's a great looking
but
car.
But if you look at...
Well, you think of the impact it actually made when it came out, startlingly good looking it actually was when it came out.
When the VE came out, which is the sort of first version of the shape that we've got now, in 2006, I think it was, so nearly 10 years ago, that was an absolutely stunning looking car.
Yes.
I think the sense of proportion... It's just a great looking car, and it doesn't really look bad from any angle. I think they've muddied the waters a little bit with the latest one. They've sort of made the tail lights a bit untidy, and they've put a bit of bling where it needn't be. But it's still a fantastic looking car in all its guises. Actually, you look at an entry level one; it's a great looking car. And you look at, you know, like an SSV with all the war paint on it; it's a great looking car.
Well, I don't like looking at the entry level ones, because they've generally got blue lights flashing lights.
They're not. But you know what I mean. I mean, they do still make cool looking police cars, actually.
I know.
That is true.
Yeah. So. Okay, no dissension there.
No. And when you've got to think too that car dating back to 2006, if you line that up against an Insignia, it's every bit as good looking, and it's probably aged better than the Insignia has.
I agree. Now, number three. This is in no way a reflection of where we're sitting or what we're doing here, but I've picked the Volvo XC90 because I think for a big SUV, and you know, I've already said, you know, I think it's really hard to make an SUV look really good.
Yeah.
I think for a big SUV, the Volvo XC90 looks absolutely sensational. It's got all the design cues that you'd expect from a Volvo, but it just looks sensational on the road. In fact, today I followed a couple of them back. They're obviously out on a drive route before we came. They look great on the road. Mm. I think they're fantastic.
I would have disagreed with you until tonight, when I actually saw it in the metal for the first time, and I do agree. It's
cool,
actually a sensational looking car.
I can't think of another SUV that looks...
Oh, no, look, I don't disagree. I only have one point of order. And that is this in the fine print of everything we were asked to do, but is that car on sale in New Zealand yet?
Yes.
When did it go on sale?
Because we just attended the launch about an hour ago, so I'd be officially on sale. And I'd already driven it and seen it.
See, that's why I didn't include it, because it wasn't on sale.
Okay. Well, that's all right.
Okay, great.
If you'd included it, I would have had to pick another one.
I know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so worst looking.
Okay.
Woo.
Yeah, this is really, it's good.
Yeah.
I have chosen the Toyota Prius C because...
I think that's unfair.
I don't mind.
No, I don't.
Just wait. I don't mind a Prius or a Prius V.
Yep.
They look how they look. They're supposed to look that way. They're quite ugly. People revel in the fact they're ugly, because it's just like an anti-car statement. It's like, you know, I don't care about cars. I just want something that's as green as possible. It makes that statement, you know, they don't need to look that ugly, but they do, and people seem to appreciate that, because they're not car people. Prius C is an interesting little car, but it's an attempt to make a Prius look interesting and funky and capture the youth market. And I think they failed miserably. I think it's an awful looking thing. It's all out of proportion.
I've seen some very happy 65-year-old youths youth driving that car.
Because the origins of this car...
I actually don't mind it.
It's a youth brand in Japan. It's not a Prius in Japan. It's called the Aqua.
Yeah.
They have a whole range of these cars.
Yeah, which is why it's painted all those funky colours, too.
Yeah. It's supposed to be for young people. It's supposed to be cool looking. And it's just not. It's all wrong.
Yeah, that's true.
It's all wrong.
Okay, granted. But I still quite like it.
I'm not saying I dislike the car, but I don't think it looks good.
Yeah.
My second car is the BMW X3, which is absolutely my least favourite BMW as a car, but also my least favourite BMW in terms of styling. I just think...
Yeah.
I like...
Worse than an X1?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. I think the X1's got a bit more character. The X3 is absolutely just generic BMW. Mm. It's what you would get if you put BMW styling cues into a computer and asked it to spit out something that was a mid-size SUV. That's what you
Well, get. I'm sure that's probably exactly what happened to it.
Yeah.
And in fact, the X3 has always been a nasty-looking car. The first generation
the first one was just
awful.
Awful. Like that was, yeah.
Yeah.
That was an awful car as well. Yeah. You know, this new one is good to drive, but in terms of styling, it just doesn't work for me. There's nothing distinctive about it at all. It's just a generic mid-size SUV that you look at it and you immediately know it's a BMW, but there's nothing special about it.
It certainly has been shown up as a poor cousin when you compare it with an X5 and all the other vehicles that have, they've all got, they all look a lot more special.
Even the X1, which I don't think any of us are particularly fond of as a car, but even the X1 has got a lot more style and character than an X3.
That's
the end of my sermon.
That is a good one.
And my last one, a lot of cars are vying for this last place, but I'm going to go with the Renault Koleos.
The Koleos!
Because it just looks wrong from every angle, and there's nothing more that I can say about that. It's just,
I think you can also say that every successive facelift has only succeeded in making it look worse than it was before, which doesn't help its cause.
It's sort of got, it's got a hunched back, and it's just wrong at the front, and the ground clearance seems all wrong for the proportions of the vehicle, and it's just, there's nothing right about it.
I'd have to say that as a former Renault owner, you're exactly right. No, I had a Scenic.
Yeah,
which is what the Koleos sort of really replaced,
Yeah.
We of the Scenic Club would all lament the loss of the Scenic and the arrival of the Koleos.
Yeah, it's just awful.
Plus, as I think I did point out one time, several years ago when we had it parked off in the distance with the tailgate open. When it is parked with the tailgate open, it does look like a dog trying to evacuate its bowels, shall we say.
I wasn't going to say that.
That's an unfortunate thing to say about a Korean-built Renault. But nonetheless,
I did want to bring up the Korean aspect because I thought that would be
But that is the point. And one of the things about the Koleos was that it was so un-Renault in France that they dropped it from sale.
They did,
yeah.
Well, you could actually open the bonnet on it and pick out all the names of other cars underneath the bonnet, couldn't you? That went into its construction.
Again, you're going off topic. It's not about engineering.
It's an ugly little spud anyway, so there you go. That's why it's there.
Anyway. Your turn.
My turn. Oh, here we go. Bring it on. No particular order, because I didn't actually think that long or hard about it, to be honest.
But we're starting with the good-looking ones, right?
Yes, we're starting with the good-looking ones, but this is not our top, you know, 1, 2, 3.
Is it not?
I know, because I didn't think that hard about it.
Okay.
That's all right. We can do that for you.
Yeah.
I'm sure you will. You would have seen the look of disgust across my face when you mentioned the Jaguar XJ, David, because that is one of my picks.
Oh, okay.
I think it's an absolutely stunning
car. I thought
you
both absolutely disagreed with me.
No, I agree completely. No, I think it's an absolutely remarkable looking car, and it's and I again disagree with Richard. There's nothing derivative about it.
Okay.
It looks like nothing else on the road.
So
it's
two against one.
We don't see many modern cars down where I live, so you know,
it's just
down the manor or two.
Stunning car, and I think the long wheelbase version is even more stunning.
Yeah,
that's awesome. I just love it.
And I think it's a shame that car is out of contention for our government limousines.
Yeah.
Because they're cool.
I mean, you know, M looks cool driving around in it in the James Bond movies. That's enough for me.
Yeah. Mm. John Key's just like M.
Jeez.
Right, moving on. Mazda 6. On the right wheels, in the right colour, it is absolutely stunning looking.
The wagon looked good.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm keeping that one open. I'm not being specific on model.
When it was new, the wagon looked good.
I like the Mazda, what do they call them? The Kodo styling.
Sort yeah,
of sure.
But I think out of all of them, probably the 6 is the most contrived.
Yeah.
I don't disagree, but it means
well, obviously you do, because you've got it in your list.
Sort of like hunched leopard charging elephant or something. Yeah. Like Kodo.
No, you're wrong.
Is it?
It's remarkable looking car.
Right.
In the right, like I say, in the right colour, on the right wheels.
What's the right colour?
It's quite staggering. I quite like white.
well, that's the wrong colour because you can't see any of the lines.
So
you can't see the crouching tiger.
So is this all?
You've got the wrong brand.
Is this all leading up to you saying that you've got a reps job with like? you've got a choice of.
I've got the 15-inch steel wheels and white. I think it's amazing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's score too for Mazda, isn't it?
So, I think so.
Yeah.
I think that whole Mazda design language actually is quite what it is.
It's actually score 3 because the CX-3 was on my original list as well.
Yeah, wow. CX-3 was one that I strongly considered too.
Wow. So, beat you to it.
Yeah, all right. Mazda 6. Yeah.
And thirdly, but not necessarily in third place, is the Mercedes C-Class wagon.
No.
Really? You're tough. I've just had a C-Class wagon to drive, and I quite like the look of it, but it wasn't on my list.
It's a gorgeous looking car.
No, it doesn't look gorgeous, but it's a fantastic car. It's striking.
Well, if it's the road test car, I think we all had.
Yeah.
A lot had been done to that car to make it look good.
Yeah,
it was because it could, like, it had the AMG kit on it and
the
nice
problem,
wheels.
I know actually, Damien. You've got this thing for cars with this sort of body crease that starts at the bonnet and then goes at an odd angle, sort of down towards the ground. That's your thing. Because the Mazda 6 and the Mercedes C-Class both have that.
You'll be right.
Okay.
Well, I think you're wrong.
So, I mean, you're wrong, but there's
they were your besties.
No talking to you about.
Yeah, no. I started with the ugly ones.
Right.
Now I'm going to go for the.
Yeah.
Right.
They were your, they were your besties.
No, I disagree with that. Right. I think that the C-Class estate is absolutely beautiful car. So shut up. Anyway, I did.
Crikey.
Well, we did.
Yes, I know.
We were waiting to hear.
There was a very awkward silence.
Well, we're frightened.
I'll put the knife down.
Yeah.
Okay, ugly cars. I can't believe no one else came up with this one.
If it's a really incredibly obvious one, I wouldn't have come up with it because I avoided those because I have imagination. Go ahead.
SsangYong Stabic.
Yeah, see, that's too obvious. That is too obvious.
It's not too obvious. It is ugly.
And that's another one that's in the so bad it's good category.
Not anymore. The original one, maybe.
Yeah, they have tidied it up a bit, haven't they?
They've just made it a weird mix of bland and incredibly ugly.
Yeah.
And then got a
that's the one that was called the Rodeus.
Yes.
Everybody called it the
styling. I've got a fact. Styling inspiration for that vehicle was the super yacht, the world of super yachts.
Was.
Yeah. That's why it had that weird sort of curving pillar which they've since tried to hide by blacking it out.
Yeah. Which
was the work of design was Ken Greenlee.
Yeah.
We did that in stereo.
We both know.
Really,
he was the first. He was the first first emigre to design designer to emigrate to South Korea, or was it North Korea? I'm not sure. to design cars for the Koreans, and now. Yeah.
He looks quite a lot like Kenneth Branagh. I don't know whether that affects his drawing ability or not. I sat next to him at dinner once.
Poor old Kenneth Branagh, if he ever went to Seoul, people would rush up to him and say, "Oh, you designed my car." But no, I think you're mistaking me. I'm well known for some serious acting roles. Yeah. No.
You're sitting next to Ken Greenlee at dinner. Don't mention the Stavik.
Yeah. You're very good in Hamlet. Well, that's good.
Straight water.
Those SsangYong people, they'll take that well.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah, no, they're sure very.
They will. But I mean, it is an appalling.
It's not a great looking car.
It's a terrible looking car, and they've tried to make it look better, and they've only succeeded. And
got 11 seats though.
You didn't have one of those, you wouldn't have 10 friends, would you?
15 children.
Yeah. Well, one wife and 9 children.
Okay, next. Hyundai iX35.
That was on my list!
That is,
and I decided not to go that way.
You say how hard it is to make a small SUV look good. Well, it's obviously not hard to make it look like your slightly retarded cousin, because that's just an ugly, ugly little
car. The reason why I thought it would be a good one for the ugly list was because everyone sees what a fantastic looking car it is.
It's never interesting.
And I don't think it is.
I think
it's just a mess.
Just absolutely is. It is.
I'm not saying nothing. I actually thought it was quite a good looking car.
Yeah, see?
Oh, see? What do I know? Where's my Labrador?
It looks like some kid's just gone mad with computer assisted design. It's just
wildly just wrong.
Yeah,
right.
Every angle.
I agree.
Okay, so you're never going to Korea again? No, you've insulted 2 Koreans.
Yeah, not after your Stavik comments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Third one is the car that I actually I hate with a passion.
Really?
I do. And for no other reason than the way it looks. Although I know that you, Richard, hate it for many other reasons.
Okay.
And that is the Mitsubishi Lancer hatch.
I don't know if I'd call that ugly.
It is awful.
It's
from awkward. Front okay, don't mind that. That back end is just appalling. They like the designer sat down, said, I've got a designer hatchback version of the sedan. There we go. Draw a line from the back of the roof to the boot. There you go. There's your hatch.
It's quite good for putting your walker on the back, though. I mean, there's lots of room down the bowls.
It's an awful, ugly, horrible.
Yeah, all right.
Horrible, horrible car. Don't mind the sedan.
It's
quite handsome.
It was. How old is it now? 10 years ago.
It's getting on for 10 years, old.
Yeah, it's very old.
It is.
Yeah.
It's got another couple left.
Yes.
Another 3 years to go.
Amazing.
It'll soldier on. But just let's hope the hatch dies quickly because it's awful.
Right.
All right. Well, that was like 20 minutes of unashamed prejudice.
Sorry, I'm pleased we got that off our chest.
Yeah. I actually feel better now.
I do too. Yeah. Except you all just shot down my good-looking cars.
Just surprised.
I thought that your ugly cars were lacking in imagination. To be honest, expected better from you. I was just not angry. I'm just disappointed.
We've both got must try harder on our report cards. from Professor Linklater.
Yeah, and on that note, I think we should just end there because it's only going to get more disappointing, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much for having me on your show.
Thank you for coming.
Along.
I hope somebody hears it.
That's wonderful. You finally got to talk about the Mustang on the podcast.
Absolutely. So it's a great car. It's going to make a big impact in New Zealand when it comes here. There's no doubt about that. It's going to be a real rah-rah car, and I'm really looking forward to it being here.
Me too, because I haven't driven it yet.
Yeah. Let's hope someone from Ford's listening to that so that you can both, you know, get press cars. So anyway, on that note.
Righto.
Thank you very much for listening.
Bye.
New Zealand Motoring Podcast, brought to you by podcasts.co.nz.